On this episode of ITAV, putting the classroom on the network, securing IoT devices on the corporate LAN, and is the future of AV, IP, all that and more. Next on ITAV.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is ITAV, episode 24, recorded Wednesday, November 21st, 2018. Should you?
Support for AV Nation is brought to you by Extron Electronics.
This is the ITAV show brought to you by AV Nation. My name is Tim Albright. I am your host. What we do is we look at the intersection between IT and AV, the news that impacts them both. With us to talk about the news we've gathered this week, first and foremost, his name is Craig Mertz, and he is from HGA. Welcome, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning. Also with us is the indisputable, indescribable industry icon. His name is Bradford Ben. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here, Tim. Pleasure to see you again, Craig. And now, before I forget, the indomitable disclaimer. I speak for myself. I speak for no one else. I don't speak for my dogs. Don't speak for my wife. Don't speak for my employer. I do, however, speak for Tim because I am Tim's employer. If you have any complaints, please address them to tim@avnation.tv. Once again, tim@avnation.tv. With that, I'm going to hand it back to Tim for this week's show when we're going to get edumacated and smart.
Complaints about me or complaints about you? Because complaints about you, they should just, I guess they should email that to me too. All right. First story here comes from us, from AV Network and SCN. Talking about connected classrooms, and I'm going to read a quote from the story. Quote, unquote, the classrooms of today are getting closer to becoming the classrooms of tomorrow, a long-anticipated change by AV integrators. A big part of that change is AV systems that are being placed on the network, enabling greater connectivity, communications, and new learning possibilities that educators can leverage for their students' benefit. Craig, I want to start with you on this. What should tech managers, and honestly, as time goes on, more and more IT managers are responsible for those classrooms. What should they know about, you know, putting these things on the network and putting these classrooms on the network before they actually go down this pathway?
I think they need to understand the bandwidth requirements, the security requirements, and just that there's going to be a lot of additional devices sitting on their network. We're potentially throwing, you know, hundreds, or depending on the size of the facility, you know, a large number of IP addresses and a large number of devices onto that network. And that's something that we need to be talking to the owner, to the client, very early in their project. We cannot come back to them during the construction process and say, oh, hey, by the way, we need 1,000 additional network ports. So you need to, you know, we need to find out where those switch ports are going to come from. On top of that, you know, we're as we start to push high definition video around the network, there are large bandwidth requirements that are going to be they're potentially going to eat up the network. And on top of, you know, additionally to that, you know, networks have traditionally been non-time sensitive, and with pushing real-time video and real-time audio, we're starting to have time issues with the networks. Networks have to be time sensitive in the way that they're set up.
You said that you can't go back, you know, later in the construction process and say, hey, by the way, we need, you know, 10 or 20 or however many more drops at this location. That goes back to a very long conversation that the AV industry has had. And that is when they get involved in the construction process. A lot of times it is farther down the road. So how do we kind of justify, or not justify, how do we rectify that, where AV is not always on the forefront, not on that leading edge, they're not in the first construction meeting? How do they say, okay, you know, by the way, guys, if you're considering this, you might want to start putting this into your plans?
That probably starts in the sales process. I guess it depends, you know, on how the project's going to be taken. You know, if there's a consultant or whoever's designing the project, you know, one probably needs to understand what the AV needs are. It's like everything in IT and, you know, AV even more now, where these systems are starting to drive the building. You know, the architecture is important, you know, how the building functions is important, but, you know, the overall user experience is getting driven by the AV and the IT systems within the building. So, you know, those conversations need to happen early. And, you know, if you're an AV contractor and you're going in to sell these, I think that's, you know, you can't just sell the experience. You also have to educate the client. That's an educational side where, oh yeah, when we put this out there, we need to, you know, the sales process probably needs to include more than just the AV personnel at the school or the institution. It needs to include the IT personnel because they're going to be leveraging their infrastructure.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Bradford, same question to you: is what do these folks need to know, both from the IT standpoint and the AV technology manager standpoint? What do they need to know before they start putting these classrooms on the network?
That what they install today will be obsolete tomorrow. I know that sounds bad, but it's truly something that I'm starting to see. Is, you know, if you had told me 3 years ago we're going to do 10 gig on fiber directly to a projector, most of us would go, yeah, that's funny. And now it's something we're really doing. So I think, you know, I don't want to say future-proofing because nothing's future-proof, but I want to say thinking forward-looking of what could be next. I also think some of the integrators need to expand their IT expertise. How many buildings have we been to where the Wi-Fi solution is just a consumer access point? And as soon as you put three people on it, it slows to a crawl. So setting up that type of stuff is important so that, you know, you have student security that's authenticating to the access points. And the access points give you a mesh network. So that way, as you move from place to place, you stay connected. But at the same time, you might want to go hardwired so that way people in classroom one can only connect to classroom one. But that has a whole nother security risk in there. So it comes down to a whole bunch of planning ahead, a whole bunch of every room should have at least two fibers going into it, in my opinion, because you can hide switches above the ceiling. There are plenum spaces that you can do that in, et cetera, et cetera. But the whole idea of, it is a whole different approach. As Craig said, they're streaming high quality video. That's a big thing. Now, I will disagree a little bit with Craig. I agree it needs to be pseudo real time. The reason I say pseudo real time is if you're a second later at a remote campus, that might not be a problem as long as the teacher understands that. It's just like teaching a WebEx. Or if you're just retrieving from a media library to play back a pre-recorded meeting. That needs to be streamed continuously, but that also could be buffered. So Craig's point is very much true of a lot of things you do need to stream real time. But sometimes I think some people go, this needs to be real time before they think through all of the requirements of what's actually needed. Yeah. And then comes the one that I love and we'll probably be talking about in January if all goes well, Tim. The security of the fun. As soon as you as the IT people or the AV people put all of this on one big network, who's liable when stuff gets hacked? So then comes the question of, is it better to do Wi-Fi where you need instructions to connect? Or is it better to do wired where you have to plug in? And I'm not going to go down that whole path, but it's one of those things that needs to start. Also, to Craig's point, he said, you know, if there's a consultant on board, I hope the consultant already talked with the architect during the architect's programming phase, which is different than the AV vendor's programming phase. This is when you write down what the spaces have to do. And that's where, if there's a consultant, that onus does fall on the consultant. And sometimes this means getting involved a whole lot sooner.
Absolutely. The earlier we can start talking about this, you know, as a consultant myself, you know, getting in early is terribly important to talk because, you know, we're not just talking about the AV side. You're starting to talk about how the rooms actually function, where devices are going to be located. You know, in a lot of cases, if you come in too late, you know, if you have a large room, you could be restricted by the height of the ceiling, you know, for a projection screen. But I think also, you know, from an AV, a purely AV standpoint, I think it's also important to remember, you're not just selling to the school's AV people, you're selling to professors. They have much different expectations for how these AV systems are going to work. And in a lot of cases, in our experience here at HCA, we'll walk in and the professors are the ones driving those AV solutions, and their expectations are maybe a little out of sync with what is actually possible. You know, because they see the way, they have ideas and they have their own opinions, and they're bringing a lot of those expectations and the requirements to the table, and they're the ones driving the ship in many cases.
And to follow up on what Craig's saying, education and corporate and boardrooms and a whole bunch of places like this have multiple end users and multiple stakeholders. In the situation Craig's talking about, the professors are doing the driving of the day-to-day operations, but the tech manager is someone who has to manage all of the rooms. As an AV integrator or as a consultant, who's your client in that situation? And don't be the wise guy who says the one who's signing the check, because usually it's neither of those two.
Well, they're all your client at some level.
They're all your client.
And they all have to be happy with the system for it to actually come off for them to consider a real success, right? You have to send us all those end users. All right, guys. Next story comes to us from Network World. According to a new survey put out by ReRes Research, 83% of organizations say the Internet of Things is important to business today. 92% say it will be in two years. So that leads to a question about IoT and security risk, quote unquote, from the article. The near ubiquity of IoT does raise the security flag as it presents a significant threat vector for hackers to breach companies. Bradford, I'm going to start with you on this. How do we secure IoT devices on the network? And let's be frank here, some of the products and folks that we're going to see at ISE in 2 months and Infocom next June are absolutely IoT devices. So this is in our wheelhouse. This is something that both the IT and the AV folks have to deal with. So how are we going to secure these things?
So I'm going to come up with an answer that's not very popular, but it's secure.
Okay.
Physically separate networks, physically separate hardware. A lot of people do VLANs. Well, once you're connected to that VLAN, who knows what you can do if it's misconfigured, if you can telnet into the switch, if you can put the kernel in the switch into a panic and then get around it. But if you do here is the public Wi-Fi, that's all the IoT stuff, and that's connected and it goes out to the internet, to your cloud service that you want to do everything with, or they're going to Amazon or their app or their streaming AV Nation podcast because, you know, they're dedicated listeners. Hi, Mom. That they go ahead and do that and keep that separate from your base business. It seems relatively simple, but let's look at a bank. When you walk into a bank, they have a certain amount of money in the teller's drawers, right? And that is physically separated from the big amount of money in the vault. And there's a physical separation or an air gap in there. In my opinion, that's the same thing we should do with networks. Now, that's not very popular because now you're buying multiple pieces of hardware, but that's you have to decide how many threat vectors and what your fault analysis is and what you're comfortable with. You know, it might be that you can put point of sale and inventory on one VLAN, but all the guest IoT things are going on a completely different VLAN for all your students. You could do your library media on one VLAN, but the registrar's course, because they're doing all the classes, is 100% separate. But it still comes down to the exact same problem that we have all over the place. Good security practices, staying patched, and just because you can doesn't mean you should. I talk about this a whole bunch with people. I had this argument when I was with my former employer. Just because we can connect to the internet doesn't mean we should. Because as soon as you do that, you're the liability. We can use the Olympics recently where the drones went off. Mm-hmm. And gee, they had to go to a tape replay because someone had intruded into the network. Should it have been on the internet? In my big answer, No, but these are some of those decisions we all have to make.
Real quickly, you mentioned keeping it on a separate network, physically network. Some of these devices, though, are inherently connected to, or need to be, for functionality, are connected to both the internet and to the corporate LAN. I'll use Amazon Alexa real quickly because they, about this time last year, they announced Alexa for Business. And so this is giving you the opportunity to talk to an Alexa and control things like lights and meetings. In those cases, how do you do that? How do you do that?
So perfect example. Because this is actually what I'm doing at home. So I have all of my home control IoT things on one network that's all physically on one switch. And then I have a switch in my office that has all of the important stuff on it, like my banking records, like, you know, the AV Nation books, stuff like that. And those are two physically different networks that only come together at the fiber, at the cable modem. Same idea. Why does that have to be joined? Yes, like you said, you need to be able to put in and control the lights. So control the lights and put the IoT in and put that all on its own network. And then put your financials or your student grades or your teaching material or whatever you want to talk about on another network and keep them separate. Because people assume everything needs to talk to everything, and that's not always true. And sometimes you also can get away with putting a gateway in the cloud. There are other ways to do it, but it doesn't always, everything has to be attached to everything. If I put a motion sensor in this room that turns the lights on and off, does it need to be attached to the network?
No, it has to be attached to the lights.
Right. And I went and bought one for my walk-in closet at home for $7 at Home Depot, put it in the wall, and when I walk in, the lights turn off. When I walk out, it waits 5 minutes and the lights turn off. No Internet of Things, simple, easy, done. Now, could I put a motion sensor in there that goes back to a smart hub that does the math of have I moved all? Yes, but just because I can doesn't mean I should.
Yeah, I think
that's the big thing.
Yeah, I think you bring up a really good point, which is what I kind of keyed, what I keyed into on this article is the, you know, just because we can, should we? And that to me goes to deliberately putting devices on your network and not just doing it because, you know, you think it's cool or you know, research the devices that you're putting out there. Understand exactly what it is that they have in them and how they're working and what they're doing when they took, you know, if they need to talk the cloud in there. There are a lot of really good reasons that these IoT devices need to connect to the cloud to use machine learning or to use big data or to, you know, to get for those devices to provide real value. But at the same time, just throwing devices onto your network is going to end up in, you know, tragedy. You know, if you don't understand what those devices are doing or what they're doing. One, you know, another thing to potentially look at, and I understand that we as consumers don't necessarily have complete control over this, but one of those things is looking at what is the operating system that those devices are using. Is Linux the most secure operating system that we can be using, or could, you know, can we find a device that uses blockchain or another operating system that might be more secure today? And then, Bradford, you also mentioned, you know, patching. I think vigilance is terribly important. Having to patch, you know, keeping up to date on your patches and remedying your security flaws as they are discovered. Because a lot of these vulnerabilities that are baked into the devices take years to discover. So the next big security vulnerability that we're going to run into may be there today that nobody's seen. So making sure that all of your devices and that you have deliberately put the devices on your network and have a security strategy in place to keep track of them and to patch them is of the highest importance.
Absolutely. All right. Last story here is from our friends over at Commercial Integrator. Your future in AV is IP. Quote unquote, it's hard to believe so much has already been written about AV over IP, with so little being said about why it is essential to the future of every AV integrator and integration business. Craig, I'll start with you on this. Is the future of AV the network? Is the future of AV IP, and why or why not?
Yeah, I think the answer is yes. And the reason is the future of everything seems to be IP. Okay. From our business, which is architecture and engineering and the consulting world, I would say I am spending upwards of 50% of my time with IP-based AV for collaboration. And this goes to, you know, I think the office space and into the business world from a standpoint of the ability to collaborate using AV and IP is where business is at and where it's going. We at HGA, we use Zoom on a daily basis. We're using Microsoft Skype for Business. We're all of these, and there's, you know, whether it's Slack or Cisco Spark, there are ecosystems out there built for collaboration. And the really interesting thing is that all of this AV that we're sending over the IP, I think it lowers the hurdle to communicate. You know, in my business, I found personally that, you know, with instant messaging, even so, and the AV integrators out there probably need to be looking at, you know, deeper than just the AV side, because you know, there are ecosystems built for collaboration that are going to drive business as we move forward, even more than it does today. You know, when I instant message people and get questions that they wouldn't pick up the phone to call me about, you know, the instant message is easier for them to ask a question over instant message, but they won't pick up the phone to do it. But it's an important question that might be holding them up. So, you know, and then to move from an instant message into a screen share, to move from a screen share into a, you know, into a Zoom call or into a, you know, a voice over IP call. This is where business is going. And this is where, you know, not just on the software side or on the application side, but then driven by hardware to make those experience, you know, to make the user experience even better. I think to a certain degree it's here, and it's not going to go away.
Bradford, same question. Is the future of AV IP?
Yes. Next question.
What? Why?
On to the Bears. Oh, sorry. I got football reference there, sports ball. So there's a lot of reasons, but the first one is it's more cost effective. I'm going to rewind, let's say, 20 years. And for those of us who are old enough to remember our soldering multi-pin cables, and if you had a 64-channel multi-pin cable and you needed to pull it through conduit and get from one side of the campus to the other side, or from the lectern and the podium back to the control room, all these other things, you needed a 2-inch conduit. It had to be shielded and grounded. You had to solder it. You had to do all that fun stuff. And it took time. And now I can put 512 channels of audio on one single category 5E or better cable and terminate it in about 10 minutes if I have my glasses on. So there's the first thing, is you have the time and the cost to the infrastructure, the cost to the installer, the rack density of the amount of connectivity, all those things that a lot of people don't think of when you're looking at IP. Now, when we add all the other great things on top of it, of you can do stuff like stream it onto the internet. You can stream it farther distances. You can hope that there's optical isolation if you're using a fiber transceiver, such as with the GBIC, and now your ground hums get replaced with clocking challenges, but there's no ground hums. So IP is definitely a good way to go for both cost of input as well as just for all the flexibility it gives you. It used to be if you wanted to send audio or video to 128 outputs, you got yourself a huge matrix switcher, and sometimes it was just a switcher, and you did one-to-one and hope it worked. Now it's just like, I'm going to put everything in the cloud and go pull it. Now that's also a risk. I've seen too many lazy people who do, I'm just going to put everything on the network and pull off the channels later. And as Craig talked about at the beginning of the show, what's that do to your bandwidth? Are you overusing your bandwidth? Are you overtaxing your switches? But I do believe the benefit for audio, for video, the compression codecs still have an issue of being truly networked, but putting it on a Cat5 cable or another or fiber or using some type of IP traffic, this point-to-point instead of network, is still very viable. I think it is a vanishingly small difference, to quote Pat Brown, between doing analog and doing digital now in terms of quality. Now we can debate codecs and all that stuff, and there are differences in codecs and soft codecs versus hard codecs and all that. But when you look at the actual cost of ownership, cost of maintenance, cost of installation, your infrastructure costs, the skill of the labor you have, which I know sometimes sounds bad, IP just from a business standpoint makes a whole lot of sense. Then you add on all the other great things that go on top of it. So I think it's going there. I think it's going to continue. I think the next challenge is everyone's going to want to do it wirelessly over IP. And I think that, yes, that's exactly my look, Tim, is the big, what are you, crazy? And there are all sorts of problems with that. And then someone goes, well, I'm streaming on my Apple TV at home. Why can't I do it here? I'm using Kindle Fire. Let's go back to instantaneous security, the picture quality, blah, 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 all those great things. But I think that's going to be the next thing, is people are going to want to do everything wirelessly. And you know what the best sounding wireless mic is?
No.
A wired
mic, yes.
same thing with my most secure connection.
Yeah. Bradford, I think you bring up a really good point too when you're talking about the infrastructure side of things, is that when we move to the network infrastructure side, the cabling side, whether it's category 5E6, 6A, or we move into fiber optic cabling, has now, it's impossible to necessarily future-proof things, but from an infrastructure standpoint, the industries that have built the network cabling have roadmaps and have long-term plans for where their cabling infrastructure is going, and that is probably the best way to lay down some future-proofing for the end user is using standard-based network infrastructure or network cabling, because that gives some guarantee that the infrastructure is going to work, even if the switches are out of date in a year or 2 years or less even.
Real quickly on that, Craig, what standards should they use? And I know it may sound a little bit snotty, but the reason I'm asking is because there are several standards, both in the AV industry and IT. Where should we look for that standard?
Well, when we're talking about the network cabling, we should be immediately going to BIXI ANSI TIA. Those are the ANSI TIA is the standard holder for network cabling standards. So, and BIXI is a big player in that as well. But you know, the ANSI and the TIA have working groups. You know, we're running category 6A right now on a lot of projects. Not everybody can afford it, but that's where we're at today. And there are working groups looking at where do we go beyond 10 gigabit cabling. You know, is copper still viable, or are we into a fiber world? And then what does that do to everything? But you know, BIXI is a really great place to start. They're one of the torch holders for an industry, you know, a professional industry group. ANSI and TIA are the actual standard writers. Now, when you talk about wireless, which I agree with Bradford, we're going to be there at some point, if not now. And you know, going back to the discussion on, you know, in the classroom, is again, you know, we have professors that are seeing, you know, well, my Apple TV streams audio, why can't I do it in the classroom? Well, that's a whole different, you know, it's a whole different ballgame when we're doing it, you know, you're doing it at home versus you're doing it at school. But, you know, wireless is starting to have standard, you know, getting that standard driven, but it's still, you know, it's still the wild west out there. So, you know, that, unfortunately, I think we're still going to be, you know, struggling a little bit when we move into the wireless world.
All right, I'll get you both back on when we start heading down that road. Thank you both so much for joining us. Mr. Craig Mertz from HGA, thank you, sir. How do people find you or HGA?
Thank you. You can find me at Craig Mertz on LinkedIn or HGA on the LinkedIn, Twitters, internet, all of that, at HGA.
All right, very good. And Mr. Bradford Benn, thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Your pleasure for having me here as well. You can find me on the Twitters at Bradford Ben. You can find me on the LinkedIn, all of your favorite social media platforms, except for Facebook and Instagram, because they're evil. Also, of course, you can always find me lampooning Tim at TB Albright. He's now in a good mood because the Bears are winning, and I'm in a bad mood because the Devils are losing. However, my work softball team is 3-2, and we're perfect 3-0 every time I show up to play.
Wow.
And the key, so, you know, it's not a bad thing. Now, I also will say we got to make sure to let everyone know that Tim made the mistake of inviting me and a couple other surprise guests onto a webinar in January, so you can hear more about this when we talk about security and some of the advanced topics where he gives us a whole hour to talk about it. And he made me promise I was not going to use abbreviations if I couldn't spell and say what it was. So IP stands for Internetwork Protocol or Internet Protocol. And category stands for category. Some people call it Cat 5. So with that, I'm going to hand it back to Tim. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, everyone, for watching. And Tim, back to you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. And yeah, Bradford's right. We are doing an AV network security webinar. You can actually sign up for it on our website under the webinar section. It actually also be on our front page. So, and we'll put a link to it on this page's this show's page as well. Also, check out our supporters section. These are the folks who support us financially, help us bring you ITAV, and I mentioned ISC in a couple months, and all the coverage that we do here at AV Nation. So check all that out and more at avnation.tv, avnation.tv. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. That's all the time we have for ITAV.